What. I'm your host, Tom Kearns, and welcome to this episode of the Anglo-Saxon England podcast, episode 56, The End of the Wuffingers. The rule of the Wuffingers dynasty in East Anglia came to an end in 749. This family had been at the core of East Anglian politics since before the beginning of the kingdom's recorded history, going all the way back to the legendary Wuffa. Certainly, the end of their control of East Anglia came as a shock, as these kinds of things always do. Despite this, though, the end of the Wuffingers' monopoly on power was not characterised by disruption or upheaval. Instead, the final two kings of the Wuffingers' line, Ealdwulf and Alfwald, presided over an extended period of relative stability and prosperity in the kingdom, a fact marked by both kings' reigns lasting for multiple decades. Besides this, copious archaeological evidence has been unearthed, which demonstrates that during their time at the head of the East Anglian kingdom, the realm experienced marked economic growth through the expansion of international trade and the use of coinage. Let's begin this survey of the last two Wuffingers with Ealdwulf. The most immediately impressive thing about his reign is its sheer length. Spanning 49 years from 664 to 713, it alone is reflective of the king's great success, since, as we have seen, he must have been able to both defend the kingdom and maintain internal peace to stay on the throne for that long. Ealdwulf's background is murky. Bede tells us that his mother was one Hereswitha, a relative of Edwin of Northumbria, but his father's name is only found in genealogical lists in later chronicles. There the name is given as Athelrich, son of Eni. No one with that name is attested anywhere else in the record, and there is some speculation that this Athelrich is in fact actually a mistaken rendering of Edgerich, the man who ruled East Anglia for about 6 years, immediately prior to the reign of Unna. That Ealdwulf came from a fairly noble family, and that he grew up in proximity to royalty, is confirmed by Bede telling us that it was Ealdwulf who spent time at the court of King Radwald when he was a boy, and that it is from Ealdwulf's reminiscences that we get the story of Radwald's dual pagan Christian temple. How exactly Ealdwulf became king of East Anglia is not clear, but probably it was because neither Athelhera nor Athelwald produced any heirs. That he was a successful king is certainly undeniable, though. At the heart of Ealdwulf's achievements was the thriving commercial centre of Ypeswich, modern-day Ipswich. Prior to Ealdwulf's reign, the settlement had consisted mostly of a quay from which trading would occur, usually with continental Frisian or Frankish traders. But during Ealdwulf's long reign, the Wick expanded to the north, and in this new annex, craftspeople began producing what, since the 1950s, has been called Ipswich ware pottery, a type of ceramic modelled on imports brought from Frisia. This expansion of Ipswich also shows clear signs of central planning. Its streets were set out in a rectangular grid, and on the whole, its development closely resembles that of Dorstad, one of its principal trading partners on the continent, suggesting the very close links that existed between the two communities. It was also during the rule of Ealdwulf that East Anglia saw the introduction of its first coinage. This coinage generally follows the examples of that used in Kent at this same time, beginning with Frankish-inspired gold thrimsas, which after the 670s became increasingly debased and were eventually replaced with the silver sheitas. The distribution of coin finds in East Anglia reveals various centres of importance in the kingdom. We can tell from this that the area around Thetford was a centre of economic activity, as well as locations on the edge of the fens, such as Ilsworth and Exning. In addition to this, other areas that have produced a large number of coins include Burcastle, which is probably the site of the Irish monastery of Knobheresburg, the Royal Ville at Rendlesham, and of course Ipswich. There aren't many definitely datable events surviving from Ealdwulf's reign. The closest we have is that a plague swept England in the 660s, which resulted in a large-scale depopulation of much of the country and general understaffing of the church. As a result of this plague, Ealdwulf was forced to accept a plan proposed by Theodore, the Archbishop of Canterbury, to divide the single East Anglian bishopric of Domock into two, with Domock surviving in the south, and a new bishop of Elmham, whose post would eventually evolve into the Bishop of Norwich in the north. Besides this one event and the general appearance of prosperity, not much else is really known about Ealdwulf's long reign. We know that he must have married at some point, although we don't know the name of his wife, and it seems that he produced at least two children, only one of whom's name has survived. This one recorded child was Ealdwulf's son Alfwald, but we know little else about any of his family. We don't even know what caused Ealdwulf's death in 713, only that he was succeeded by Alfwald, the man who, as it turns out, would be the last Wulfingers king of East Anglia. Hi listeners, I wanted to take a second to tell you about the sponsor of today's episode, Factor. Eating better is easy with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, restaurant-quality, and dietitian-approved, and it's all ready to go in 2 minutes with minimal meal prep. I've had some fantastic meals like butter chicken and tomato risotto with Factor, and I've got to say I've been extremely impressed with all of them. They genuinely are restaurant-quality. You'll get over 35 different options to choose from every week if you try out Factor, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Also, with pancakes, smoothies, and more, there's over 60 add-ons to help you stay fueled up and ready to go throughout the day. Factor also works around your schedule. You can order as little or as much as you need each week, and they even let you reschedule deliveries anytime for when those unexpected somethings happen to pop up. And to top it all off, Factor is cheaper than ordering takeout, so it really is a smart move to try it out. Get started today and get after your goals. If you're interested in trying Factor, head to factormeals.com/anglo50 and use code anglo50 to get 50% off. That's code anglo50 at factormeals.com/anglo50 to get 50% off.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, my name is Peter Zablocki, and I'm a historian, author, and college professor. I'm thrilled to invite you to check out Evergreen Network's History Shorts podcast. Every Tuesday and Thursday, join me on a journey through time, exploring the little-known and hidden gems of history. In each bite-sized episode, I'll dive into my original research to bring you intriguing historical curiosities you've probably never heard of, uncovering the fascinating stories that have shaped our world. From forgotten figures to overlooked events. And the best part? I've condensed all this historical goodness into manageable chunks, perfect for your on-the-go lifestyle. Whether you're commuting to work or squeezing in a quick break, History Shorts fits into the little time you probably think you don't have. Subscribe now and never miss an episode of the History Shorts podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, listeners. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I just wanted to let you know that if you enjoy what I'm doing here, then it really helps me when you leave a review or a rating on the podcast provider you're using to listen to this, when you subscribe to the show's YouTube channel, and when you become a patron over on Patreon, where you can get access to bonus episodes, ad-free episodes, and transcripts by pledging to one of the show's patron tiers. And speaking of patrons, I want to give a shout out to Paula Tigerman, Ahmed Lloyd, and Rachel Jordan, who all recently became patrons. Thank you so much for your support, and I hope that you're enjoying the extra material you now have access to. Anyway, back to the show. Like his father, Alfwald's reign is remarkable for its length. Although not as long as Ealdwulf's 49 years, Alfwald still managed to rack up an impressive 39 years, reigning from 713 to 749. What sets Alfwald's rule apart is the profound tranquility that characterised East Anglia during his time. In an age marred by conflicts and power struggles, Alfwald's kingdom remained remarkably untouched by external military threats or internal disputes. This period of serenity can be attributed to various factors, including the well-established ecclesiastical order in East Anglia and the flourishing trade relations facilitated by the bustling port of Ipswich. It is apparent that Alfwald was a patron of scholars and monks, because it is to him that Felix's Life of St. Guthlac, the record of a charismatic hermit who lived in the fens, was dedicated. Similarly, Alfwald also composed a letter to the English missionary Boniface, in which the king demonstrated his knowledge of Latin and his keen interest in Anglo-Saxon missions abroad. In the letter, he reassures Boniface of the East Anglians' support for his mission, and even offers to exchange mortuary lists with the monk so that prayers may be said for the dead in both the Frisian and East Anglian monasteries. One of Alfwald's key achievements was his harmonious relationship with Athelbald of Mercia, a peace fostered by Athelbald's period of exile in the fens, at which time Alfwald may well have provided support to the struggling warrior. The two men also shared a common respect for the cult of St. Guthlac. Athelbald patronised the monastery at Crowland, while Alfwald personally requested the composition of Guthlac's life. Alfwald's amicable stance towards Athelbald fostered a climate of cooperation and understanding between the two realms, ensuring the maintenance of peace in the region, and allowing both Mercia and East Anglia to prosper due to both kings' interest in trade. The economic boom that was begun under Ealdwulf continued under Alfwald's rule. Ipswich continued its development, and East Anglian coinage also continued to evolve. The silver sheaters expanded during his time, and several different types began to be produced in East Anglia. Most of them fall into two main groups, known by numismatists as the Q series and the R series. Neither group bears a royal name or title, and the authority by which they were issued is not certainly established. The Q series, which has some Northumbrian affinities, is most closely distributed in western East Anglia, along the edge of the Fen, between the Wash and Cambridge, while the R series, with Bust and Standard, derived from an earlier Kentish type, and is more commonly distributed in central and eastern East Anglia, including in Ipswich. This all indicates not just a boom in East Anglia's economy, but also a diversification in it, as clearly there was a plethora of people minting money at this time, which indicates a large demand for money across the kingdom. Despite the peace that typifies his reign, Alfwald's death in 749 marked a turning point for East Anglia. Alfwald left no heir, and we do not even know if he was married. Given his skill with Latin and his clear interest in monasticism, it is quite possible that Alfwald was celibate, thus he wouldn't have produced any children. Following his death, the kingdom was subsequently divided among three rulers, none of whom seemed to have been Wulfingars, since the stock of Wulfingars seemed to have completely dried up at this point. Why this occurred, we will unpack in the next episode. For right now, we can say that the end of the Wulfingars dynasty in 749 marked a significant transition, yet it was not a finale marred by disruption and upheaval. Instead, the legacy of the Wulfingars, epitomised by the last two kings, Ealdwulf and Alfwald, was one of enduring stability and prosperity. The subsequent history of East Anglia would prove more challenging, ultimately culminating in the destruction of the kingdom itself. The Wulfingars, though, went out on a high note, something that cannot be said of most of the other dynasties in this period, and their legacy fundamentally shaped the formation of Eastern England up to the modern day. Thank you for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Anglo-Saxon England podcast. Once again, I've been your host, Tom Kearns, and I hope you'll join me again next time.
I'm Ken Harbaugh, host of the new Medal of Honor podcast from Evergreen Podcasts, brought to you in partnership with the National Medal of Honor Museum. In each 3-minute episode, we'll learn about a different service member who distinguished him or herself through an act of valor. We'll include stories from the Civil War to Iraq and Afghanistan, and from all branches of the military. We'll talk about service members who were overlooked for the medal at first due to their race or religion, and about those who were celebrated at the time. We'll hear stories of soldiers like Audie Murphy, future Hollywood star who mounted a burning tank to hold off German infantry in World War II. And people like Dr. Mary Edwards Walker, a Civil War Army doctor and the only woman to receive the Medal of Honor so far. Learn about these heroes and more wherever you get your podcasts.